This Black Friday, get 6 months free when you move your WordPress sites to Kinsta. Enjoy faster load times, no stress when traffic spikes, and hosting you can actually count on. We're G2's number one rated host for WordPress. For a reason. Visit kinsta.com/BF. That's KINSTA.com/BF. Don't miss out. Offer ends December 2nd.
Hey, everybody. Happy June.
Although, you know, I mean, who is? Maybe that's just a word of the, you know, older generation, maybe, more than we realize.
Dang it, Dalton.
I don't know. I've never heard my grandpa say hooey. He's more of a fooey guy.
This okay. is the Joe Gaither Show on BamaCentral.com.
But fooey is for the F word.
Yeah.
And hooey is for BS.
Yeah, that's true.
I think
I've always been a fan of malarkey. You know, I love a malarkey.
Yeah. Malarkey's in the hooey family. Oh, let's see if that heat will hit my vocal cord. Did you hear it go out just then?
Sounds better already.
You got to get that heat. Oh, good morning. Yeah, that's awful. We say good morning for us.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome into the Joe Gaither Show. Joe is unfortunately dealing with some hoarse voice issues this morning once again, but he's getting his coffee in him. He's getting it back together. But we are here live in the Derek Daniels studio, as always.
205-758-3391.
Ready to get into some fun topics today. I think we're gonna touch a little bit on the Vanderbilt Commodores with our continuing our Know Your Enemy series. A lot to get into with Vanderbilt. I actually think they, that schedule's tough, but Commodores are going to be a pretty solid team this year. I believe they maybe take a step forward from what they did last year.
Back-to-back bowl games.
Could happen.
Absolutely. All right. Good morning.
Sounding better.
Yeah, okay. I don't know what happened to me over the weekend. I know that I went to New Era Wrestling and went crazy, but on Sunday I was fine, and on Monday I was fine. Like I said at the end of the show yesterday, maybe it was yelling at Gunther's win on Monday Night Raw, but like, you know, Tuesday was okay, and all right, whatever. Welcome in. It's the Joe Gaither Show. I guess I can sit right here in this not so pressing the voice forward here. It is the Joe Gaither Show on Bama Central, BamaCentral.com. We are live in the Derek Daniels State Farm Studios. We'll be joined by 24/7 Sports' Joey Dwyer to talk about the Vanderbilt Commodores. But we have a couple topics to touch on and get into before we talk to Joey about the Vanderbilt Commodores, about the Fighting Diego Pavias. We appreciate everybody who's joining us on the voicemail line at 205-462-7340. Leave us a voicemail if you want to talk anything sports-related or non-sports-related. I'm wide open to your takes on anything. You can call, you can leave us a comment at JoeGaither6, at MAWoods_, and, of course, at Bama Central if you want to participate in the show. What are we going to start with? We're going to talk about today is the start of the last day. It's the last event. It's the final event of the academic athletic calendar year. The NCAA championship outdoor meet will be starting today at about roughly 11 or so at Hayward Stadium out in Eugene, Oregon. So we're going to just touch on who's participating for Alabama, where you can see the coverage, and if you want to celebrate the end of the academic athletic season, this will put us into really the ultimate doldrums. I know Alabama baseball kind of crashed and burned hard two weeks ago, and you can watch the College Baseball World Series. Mason, why don't you look up the schedule while I pontificate, because I have no idea when and what the schedule is. I know there was, what, three SEC teams, Arkansas, LSU. Was that it? Arkansas and LSU were just the two. Yes, just the two SEC teams there. So eight teams will be left right there. But the academic athletic calendar year is coming to a close, and today will be your final day. Will be the start of 4 days. The start of 4 days where you can see some Alabama athletes for the last time until we get into the 2025-26 academic athletic calendar year. Well, they're starting today as well, right, for baseball or no?
It looks like starting Friday.
Okay. All right.
Arizona Coastal Carolina is going to be our first game on Friday at 1 o'clock. Louisville, Oregon State, 6 o'clock that night, and then 1 o'clock on Saturday. Murray State and UCLA, 6 o'clock on Saturday. LSU, Arkansas. tough that they had to pair the two SEC teams together.
No, love it. I mean,
I don't care personally, but you know, for anybody that is banging the SEC drum, hate it for them.
Crash and burn. It's fine. As soon as Alabama,
glad Tennessee's not here.
When Alabama went 0-2, I wished ill will on all the other teams, 13 squads that were in the, and honestly, you know, I was close to being in Omaha and having to go to Omaha. If Vanderbilt had taken care of the business, I might have been, we might be doing this show remotely. And I'm very thankful for you, Wright State, Murray State, Wright State got them, and Louisville got them, and made it a tough weekend. Once the Alabama crashed and burned, I thought the best story here is for all of these teams to crash and burn. And most of them did.
They did. I mean, who are we rooting for? I guess the answer's got to be Murray State.
Read them again. Yeah, Murray State.
We got Arizona, Coastal Carolina, Louisville, Oregon State, Murray State, UCLA, LSU, and Arkansas.
Did you say Coastal?
Coastal.
All right, that's my second.
Coastal's probably. But, you know, they did win, what, however many years within the last?
I think they were 19, was it 19? 18.
Okay, it was a little longer ago than I thought it was. So, yeah, that's okay. They are the 13th seed. The you know, Arizona, Louisville, and Murray State looks like they're the lowest.
They won in 16. We're old, bro. They won in 2016. Wow. Yep, they beat Arizona in 2016.
Yeah, I remember that being like a crazy thing. I remember watching that. My grandpa's a big college baseball fan. I was watching it with him, and he was losing his mind that Coastal Carolina was winning.
Well, hell yeah. So we'll go Murray State, go Coastal. Any the smaller, the better. The more underdog, the better. That's who I'm pulling for.
I would like to see Coastal up there. The teal is one of the most underused colors in all of sports. Nobody uses teal. You know, we don't use teal enough. It looks great.
It's great. Absolutely. So that'll be starting Friday. But we're going to talk just briefly about the NCAA Track and Field Championships, and then we're going to tell you why we're going to fulfill the social media tease from late last night. I put out, if you follow me at Joe Gaither 6 or the Joe Gaither Show on Bama Central on the Facebook side of things. I got a little show page right there. You can follow either one of those. I'd really appreciate that. Where I said, I think Greg Byrne might listen to our podcast. And I actually have a decent reason for that. Maybe it's not a decent reason, and you can comment on the show at Joe Gaither 6 or leave me a voicemail at 205-462-7340. So I will answer that tease, and then we will get Joey Dwyer in there. But first, we are enjoying, or we will start the NCAA Outdoor Track and Field meet today in Eugene, Oregon, Hayward Stadium.
Do they just always get to host it?
Yeah.
Why not? That makes perfect sense.
The home of track.
Is there anywhere else in the country that has even a remotely comparable venue?
Not that can host that large of people, that many the spectators as well. Not off the top of my head. Maybe there is.
Because as someone who, like, I know nothing about that. Nothing about track and field, really. Hardly at all. But I know that I know about Oregon's track and field stadium. I know about that place. And I think that maybe says a lot that someone like myself, who does not know anything about the sport, happens to know about that field.
Slamstocks.com rates the top 10 college track and field athletic facilities. You've got number 9, Andre Reed Stadium, Kutztown University. You've got Sam Bailey Track and Field Stadium, University of Alabama, number 9.
Hey, right there. Okay.
So we have had we'll have a meet basically every year there, but you can't host that many people there.
I will say, like, I've driven past that place, I don't know how many times. Seen in person a bunch, you know. I have seen photos of the Oregon facility.
Night and day.
And, like, yeah, if that's the jump from, what was it, 8?
That was 9.
9 to 1? I think that Oregon may just, yeah, maybe really far and above everyone else.
Cromwell and Catherine B. Locker Stadium at University of South Carolina is 8. Rock Chalk Track and Field Complex, University of Kansas is 7. Obviously, you got the Kansas Comet, who made some waves there as well. Clyde Hart Track and Field Stadium at Baylor. James G. Presley Stadium at Florida, number 5. Mike A. Meyer Stadium, University of Texas. You got to put that A in there. Christy Matthews Memorial Stadium, Bucknell at 3. Franklin Field, University of Penn at 2. And, of course, Hayward Field, University of Oregon at number 1. This stadium, total capacity at Hayward Field, 25,000. Yeah, no disrespect to University of Alabama's facility, but I would guess that that capacity is probably 1,500.
Yeah.
2,000, 3,000 max. Today is the start. The field events start at 3:30, and the track starts at 6 o'clock. You can start seeing the stuff on ESPN. Really, if you're just watching ESPN and you only have basic ESPN, turn it on at 6, and you will see kind of a very master style esque cut to cut to cut, event to event to event. So it's a good way to see it all. But if you're going to be a junkie, you can turn on ESPN Plus at really, well, at 3 o'clock, 2 o'clock. Oh gosh, I think I'm in Eastern time at 2 o'clock, and you can see the decathlon get started. Lots of field events. You got the decathlon, hammer throw. You got pole vault, javelin, long jump, shot put today, all in the men's division. The men's day one is today. Women's day one is tomorrow, and then they will do day two finals on Friday for men, and day two finals on Saturday for women, and they will be wrapped up at the very end of the night. We will close with the 4x400 relay. If you are on Roll Tide, or if you're on BamaCentral.com, I will list it out. Who is competing for Alabama today? Ezekiel Pittering will compete in the 3,000-mile steeplechase today. Alabama's got Christopher Crawford and Trevor Gunzel competing in the shot put. Samuel Ogazi will be in the 400-meter dash. Victor Kiprop, Dennis Kiprutu, and Dismas Lokira are all in the 10,000 meters. Now, the 10,000 meters is not a semifinal situation. It is a one-off race. So that is, what, 3, 6, 9? That's basically 10,000 meters, 1,600 is a mile. So 3,200 is basically 2 miles, 2, 4, 6 is basically 6 and change. Mm. It's basically 6 and change for Victor Kiprop looking to take a NCAA championship.
That might be more than I move total today.
Yes.
It's only about 3 miles for me to get back home from here.
Oh, in the car too.
Like, I mean, honestly, probably won't leave home again, going straight home to do some work. That might be more than I travel total today.
Wow. Even with your vehicle. Yeah. Victor Kiprop and them boys are going to go 10,000 meters tonight. Donald Chiangwa, Samuel Ogazi, Osuma El Buchabi, and Peter Diebold, they will all team together in the final race, the 4x400-meter relay, and that will be a semifinal situation. So basically everybody, all those men, are in semifinal situation. They all have to qualify for Friday's final, except for the 10,000 meter. The 10,000 meter, it's a one-off. We ain't making you run 6 miles in two different days, fellas. So that will be happening today. Christopher Crawford, Trevor Gunzel are in the shot put. Their semifinal is early in the day. If they qualify for the final, that'll be 6:30 or so, and they'll be trying to bring home a shot put championship. And then we'll do women's tomorrow. The women will have their day one tomorrow. We're looking for Doris Lemingole to defend her NCAA championship. Oh, man. So the reason I'm a nerd about this, I love you, Dad, is because of my father, track and field, cross-country coach my entire life, several different prominent high schools in the Rome, Georgia, and Chattanooga area, multi-time state champion, and also Chattanooga Sports Hall of Famer. So I appreciate you, Dad. I will call you later and see if you're watching this and see if you need my ESPN Plus login. So that's what we'll do. Will you pay attention at all, or?
Yeah, no? I tried to do it as a kid once. And I remember going and asking the coach about it in like middle school, and I didn't want to run. I was like, I just want to do the field events. And they told me I could not do that.
Oh, that's not right.
Yeah. They made everybody do everything when we were like 12. I guess it makes sense. They make kids just get a wide range, but yeah, I was like, yeah, I'm not running. So I never got into it. Never got the track bug.
He didn't give you the default 100 meter dash and just be like,
I mean, I wouldn't have done it.
It's 100 meters. It's just the whoop.
That's more than I wanted to do.
Okay.
I
just, come on, coach, compromise. That's
what I wanted. I just wanted to throw the heavy thing. I've seen people do this. I want to throw heavy things. And they told me, no, you're going to have to run. And I was like, that's a little too much for little Mace.
That's bad coaching, to be honest with you. If you'd have been on my father's track team, he'd have looked at you and been like, don't know what your running event's going to be. Have you heard of the shot put?
That's all I wanted to do.
All right, I will compliment my dad in that area. He would have let you run if you wanted to, but it would have been like, I think you're better off over there with the big guys.
Yeah, shot put always just seemed fun. It's simply throwing heavy things. It's just that's like as classic as you can get.
And so a lot of these guys, two of these guys are going to be competing in the discus. They separate the discus. Yeah. The discus will be on Friday for the boys.
That one is one that is very wild to me. And I'm sure there's a ton of skill in shot put, don't get me wrong, but it always feels like discus from an outsider's perspective, like myself, is a lot more like finesse oriented and things. And it's really crazy to me. I do love watching the field events. I've never particularly gotten into watching the track events as much. They're great, and it's cool, and I'm very happy for those athletes. Just not my cup of tea, but I do like watching the field events.
So last night I was up late watching old Steve Prefontaine stuff. There's not a lot on YouTube about old races, but just getting in my feels, thinking about that. I'll throw this out to the audience before we move into the next little topic here. Who is the greatest athlete taken too soon? Steve Prefontaine dies at 24 in a car accident before his second Olympics. He goes to the Olympics as a 21-year-old, finishes fourth in the 5,000 meters, leads most of the race until basically gets caught by adults. You don't have to have an answer now, Mason, but think about this over the next day or so. The greatest athlete, the best athlete taken too soon. I got nominations on my tweet with... I got
one that jumps into my head.
Go ahead.
See. And I didn't watch this player at all, but I have heard the legend of him, since, Lynn Bias.
That's the comment I have. Lynn Bias and Ernie Davis are comments. I'm going to have to look up Ernie Davis a little bit, but I accept any comments and any perspectives on older athletes that I may have missed. My other comment on this was athletes that the kids don't know about. And so I think Steve Prefontaine is one of them that you got to throw in there and teach the kids about. Lynn Bias, definitely in that track as well. So if you got an older athlete or an athlete that shines so bright but was taken too soon, I would love to hear your perspective on the voicemail line at 205-462-7340, extension 800. All right, I got one more short topic before we turn to Joey Dwyer and get our Know Your Enemy segment started. And that is Greg Byrne. Love you, Greg. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. I appreciate you doing that. You can follow Greg Byrne on all the social media machines by just typing his name in there. I have a sneaky suspicion that Greg Byrne listens to the program. Now, a little bit of that is arrogance and is a lot of assumption. And so I admit that and apologize for that. It could be a totally incorrect assumption. But why did I make this assumption yesterday? Well, Greg Byrne spent some time with our friends, Mac and Q, Greg McElroy and Cole Kublik on Jocks 94.5 yesterday. And Greg Byrne, let me just make sure I get it right so I don't misquote him, because that's not really what I want to be doing here. But Mac and Q, Greg McElroy, they throw out there a common perception. Hey, Greg, obviously you're business focused. This $20.5 million is going to be having to come from somewhere. Cuts and raising money in the athletic department and all kinds of things. I mean, the finances are just out of control and beyond what I want to even consider and tackle. Like, geez, it makes me crazy, right? And so with all these elements that he is dealing with, so many elements, all the coaches, how much money am I going to get? How much money is my program going to get? Can we raise more NIL for my program? Ridiculous.
Yeah.
Is this trip in our budget? Can we schedule that team?
Just thinking about just looking at a budget for any given program and just simply the amount of various expenses, little things here and there too, small, however many $100 here, a few $100 there, $1,000 here, $1,000. Like, it's just, it has to be a nightmare.
And I'm sure Greg is not going through every single line item. He's got people in his office that are helping him with that. And here's my dad, Greg.
But at the end of the day, he's got to answer for if anything's bad.
He's the head man, of course. And so with all these complications, you get, and I've seen this a lot, Greg Byrne doesn't care about the fan. Greg Byrne doesn't.
I have said this multiple times on the show, I believe.
Okay. All right. That's fine. He says Greg Byrne doesn't care about you know, Jimmy from Gordo, sure. you know, Billy from Coleman, whoever mm-hmm. it is. So they ask him about that. And he says, the fans are critical. I know sometimes people say that the athletic department doesn't care about the fans. That's a bunch of hooey. We may not charge the prices they want us to charge. I understand and appreciate the fact that people are trying to make budgets work and be part of things they're interested in, which we're fortunate to have so many fans at Alabama. We need to make sure we do everything we can to give them a good product on the field and the courts at the same time, to give them outside the stadium from the time they get here to the time they get to their seats. Hopefully it's as efficient a process as possible. He continues a little bit. We're going to try to evolve with what the services that we offer our fans. At the same time, too, we have to make sure that our fans understand why we are changing the way we did. All right. So great. Good answer. Of course, I care about the fans. Okay, and he tries to throw out, sure. you know, this and that and various changes. The reason that I think that Greg Byrne might listen and might watch the show is the usage of the word hooey. Why? When Joe wants to say a cuss word, when Joe wants to say BS, and look, I try as hard as I can not to cuss on this show. That is not something that I'm very good at in my personal life. I will say that and admit that that's a big fault. I am very colorful a lot. But on the show, I want to keep it very clean in case you're listening in the car with your 12-year-old, in case you are just looking for something a little more, to get away from any mess. So we try to keep it pretty clean just so the FCC that's not listening to the show, because we're not under FCC regulations, doesn't fine us. Anytime that I want to say BS, then the word is hooey. The word is, oh, that hooey. Get that hooey out of here. And look, Greg Byrne was under FCC regulations and obviously was trying to keep a PC. I don't know anybody else. I'm sorry. This is the arrogance talking. I don't know anyone else that uses the word hooey. I'm sorry. And please, if it's you and you think, oh, Joe, that's a super common word. I use it all the time. I've used it for years. Mm-hmm. Whatever. I accept your criticism. I accept a correction. I accept re-education on that. But Mason, I don't know anybody that uses that word.
Well, I mean, you know, let's look at it this way. I think there's a non-zero chance that Greg Byrne does at least know who you are.
Okay.
He's seen your face.
Fair.
A lot of times.
That's true. That is true.
I would imagine he's somewhat familiar with many of the people that are covering a lot of the sports that are under his wings.
We were in the Hattiesburg press box together for a brief time.
So, it's not crazy to think that he at least is aware of your presence.
I agree with that.
And I also don't think it's all that crazy to think that maybe Greg Byrne spends sleepless nights scrolling through the internet and looking at what people are saying about his programs and teams, just seeing what the general perception is, because I think he's a person who tries to stay very on top of those Agreed. Kinds of things. And also that leads me to the conclusion that I wouldn't be shocked if Greg Byrne, it's 2-3 in the morning, he can't sleep this night. He's up listening to the Joe Gaither show, just like, what do these idiots have to say?
Well, Greg, if you're listening, keep going, brother. Keep going, sir. Sir. Sir.
Yeah, I could see him just dabbling in all kinds of various Alabama, whatever it is, you know, whatever show you want to insert, you know, just 10, 15 minutes here, 10, 15 minutes there, look, just to get a feel what everybody's saying. I could definitely see him doing something like that. He feels like someone who's always very on top of things. I think he has a very good understanding of what the perception of, you know, the athletic department is at Alabama. I don't think he's, you know, looking at things with rose-colored glasses or anything. I think he knows what people are feeling, and he kind of knows the issues that people are having. And, you know, I imagine he maybe does a good job to try to stay as on top of that as he can to get ahead of the perception, and maybe he can, you know, adjust the course there.
I appreciate that, and that just made me laugh, obviously. I saw that word, and I thought, where'd you hear that word?
I think there's a non-zero chance he has heard an episode of this show. I don't think we can say it's a 0% chance.
Well, hopefully he's listening today, and if so, then he can make sure that Kalen DeBoer gets the team ready for Vanderbilt.
Yeah. I don't think it's
like... I was on the sidelines with that, when the Vanderbilt stuff was happening, and he was just like...
fire in his eyes.
He's just like, get off the field, get off the field. Trying to usher him into the locker room. You know, and look, as an athletic director, you are in a protect my kids mode.
Yeah.
Protect my kids. Let's not have another Jermaine Burton situation. Everybody run off here. that Vanderbilt moment, the Vanderbilt storming was a whole lot calmer and nicer and less venomous than the Oklahoma storming.
Yeah, that checks out from everything every report I've heard, basically from you. I think I miscategorized maybe Greg Burns. But like, I don't think that Greg Burns does not. I think on a macro level, he does care about Alabama fans. Absolutely, the athletic department cares about the fans. They are who drive the profits for the athletic for the program. I just think that on a micro level, you know, if somebody sends Greg Burns saw an email one day. Hey, I'm so-and-so from wherever, Alabama. I can't afford my damn tickets this year. He's going to say, oh, trash.
Right.
Delete that email right to the
drawer. What can I do?
Yes, that is what I mean. Like, and that's fair, I guess. It just kind of sucks that a lot of people who, you know, are probably some of the most passionate parts of this fan base are getting priced out of being able to go to games. Like, I'm looking at tickets now. You want to go to a decent game?
No.
Wisconsin, $125 gets you in the door.
That's not bad. That's really not bad.
Per ticket.
But you know, it stacks up.
Not including any fees, not including parking, not including paying for any food or concessions or anything.
Single Joe, that's not bad. Joe with wifing three kids, that's a
Vanderbilt, $149 gets you in the door.
We are taking advantage. We're playing on the revenge factor.
You know, upper deck corner seat. These are not great seats.
We're playing on that revenge factor. We're trying to get the Alabama fan base in Bryan Denny, who wants to yell at Diego Pavia.
Tennessee, we're jumping up to 280 for a ticket.
What?
Yeah.
He knows we lost those games last year, right?
$280.
Are you on StubHub?
Yeah.
Okay, well, that you get a little fee. Yeah. You get a little secondary market there, and those will all come down. I imagine those will come down a little. $280 for a
tenant. It's gotten a bit ridiculous, these ticket prices. And I, again, like you said, I understand a lot of it is some fees and things, but...
Thank you, Chris Walsh, letting me sit in the nice seat. Because I would not be there without that. Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right, so those are our two topics for the day, and now we need to turn our attention. Joey's been sitting patiently, goodness gracious. Joey's been sitting patiently in the back end. You can follow Joey Dwyer let me make sure I have it right, at Joey_DWY, I think is how I have this. Let me double check myself. Yeah, DWY. Joey_DWY on the Twitter machine. You're probably already following him if you're looking for anything Vanderbilt related. He has been all over it for 24/7 sports for quite some time, and we want to welcome him into the program and get to know our enemy. Good morning, Joey. How we doing, sir?
Good morning. I'm good. My camera is not nearly as good as yours, which I realized as soon as I got put on, so we'll have to fix that at some point.
That's okay. We downloaded some apps that made it work, so we're looking at our phone cameras. We're not looking at our computer cameras. I think that it's just kind of, since we do it every day, that's why we did this.
I love it. Yeah, that's an area that needs to be addressed and has been needed to be addressed for a long time.
I'll let you know what these apps are off air, but they're really simple and really free, and they did make the show 5% better. How's life in Nashville? You guys, oh man, we need to just double check in. Did the baseball stadium burn down? Is everybody okay?
It was an odd day there that day. I don't know that I've ever felt Hawkins Field that eerie, and it was really quiet that day, which was interesting. I think a lot of people were waiting to see if they play Louisville that night, and they're at that point. But gosh, that was a day where. I don't know. I don't know if I'll ever feel Hawkins Field like that again, to where there's just such shock in the building, and it was just so quiet and drained of energy. And man, looking at the dugout after that game too was just unbelievable. So what a day! And I don't think it's burned down yet, but it's not going to look great all off season because they're going to start a lot of that construction. And gosh, it's going to be a pain to get around there at some point this year.
Well, speaking of construction, there is an area of construction that's completed. First Bank Stadium's got that right hand side complete now. So let's go back. Let's go back. What would that have been? 9, 8, 10 months ago, roughly. We're in October. We're in First Bank Stadium, Alabama taking on Vanderbilt. Joey, this is my birthday weekend, and I have planned activities on Friday, and I've planned a really easy day on Saturday, and I've planned, you know, we're going to drive back Saturday night, watch some wrestling when I get back. It's going to be easy. It's going to be great. It's going to be no problem. And then kickoff happens. Vanderbilt wins 40-35. Really death by a thousand paper cuts. And I'm fearful that Gus Malzahn is watching this game over and over and over again as Alabama prepares for Florida State. But we've already talked about Florida State. We are here for Know Thy Enemy, the Vanderbilt Commodores. What was your perspective last year as Vanderbilt is pulling off easily the greatest upset in Clark Lee's history, maybe a top 5-10 upset in Vanderbilt football's history?
Oh, I mean, it was the biggest win in program history, undoubtedly. And I think the craziest part of that game is it wasn't like a fluky, oh, Diego Pavia throws 80 yards down the field twice and they get a bunch of fluky tipped up pick sixes, which there was the one where Randon Fontenot took it back to the house. But also, like, I thought Vanderbilt outplayed Alabama that day. And it's odd, too, because, like, you're watching the offensive line just push Alabama around up front. And then you think about where we're at now, and Vanderbilt's main point of emphasis throughout the offseason was they've got to get a lot better on the line of scrimmage, especially on the offensive side. And you're watching that game, and you're like, well, why do they need to get better? Because they're pushing Alabama around. They're creating holes for Cedric Alexander to run anytime he wants to. If you watched that Vanderbilt team that day, you thought that team had more capability than it actually did. It played pretty much a perfect game, and it'll have to do that again to beat Alabama this year. I don't think there's any doubt about that, but that was the best night in Vanderbilt football history, and it was unbelievable to be in there that night. Whenever they won, I just went and found Diego Pavia's brother to see if he would talk, and turns out he did, and gosh, that was a great move there. Got some content out of him, but he had actually guaranteed a win to me before the game, as did CJ Taylor, the starting field safety for Vanderbilt, or not the start, the boundary safety for Vanderbilt. And gosh, it was an unbelievable situation to where, like, he guaranteed a win to me, and then there's people that were in positions of power that wanted that to not be out, and basically forced it to come down, and then they ended up winning. It was an unbelievable turn of circumstance there.
Ay, ay, ay. So let's talk about this year. Let's spin it forward. How can Vanderbilt build off of Clark? I mean, great season. You almost pulled off a second upset, defeating Texas at home, losing by three. Just kind of didn't have just enough gas to get that second top five win. Did beat Auburn. Thank you for that. It made living in the state a bit better, so you didn't have to hear their side saying, well, y'all lost to Vanderbilt. Well, we both lost to Vanderbilt, so suck it up, and we both got to get better. How did Vanderbilt – we all know you brought Diego Pavia back. We all know you got Eli Stowers. We're all looking at that running back, Cedric Alexander, who tore up Alabama a bit last year. But how did Vanderbilt get better in the offseason?
Well, first of all, I think the retention is really the story here. You've got almost the entire starting defense back. You're losing the two safeties, but really other than that, you've got just about everybody else back. You got everyone on the defensive line who really made an impact, but Demarion Thomas, who transferred this spring, is back, and the linebackers are back. A lot of the corners are back. They got healthier at corner, and I think the thing at corner this year, and it might be – a real determining factor for their defense, is like, are their corners good enough to actually play man? Because last year for long stretches, they're having to sit in zone and kind of just getting carved up. And that was really their downfall. And it really has been for all of Clark Lee's tenure, but they finally have started to, maybe they've put resources in the corner in the past, but I think they finally look like a team that has put resources into corner. Now they've got Martel Hyde is really their guy. Colby Taylor's back. And obviously he had some penalty issues and some temper issues throughout the year, but when he's on, he's one of the more talented guys on the entire roster. Jalen Lackey should take a year two leap. And then you've got Jordan Matthews from Tennessee, the transfer, two FCS transfers who both missed last year, one due to cancer, one due to an Achilles injury. So they should be better there. And then offensively, you've got basically everybody back, but the big difference is they really invested in the offensive line. They're not going to have guys play out of position. Chase Mitchell is going to slide inside rather than playing on the outside where he was susceptible at times last year. Jordan White, his former teammate at Liberty, I don't know if they were teammates. I don't think they lined up exactly, but they knew each other. They were both Chris Kanakis guys. Jordan White's going to be probably one of the better centers they've had, especially throughout Clark Lee's tenure. And then they've got a couple other transfers who I think could really make an impact there. They've looked the part more offensively on the offensive line. And I think that's where you start and say, if their offense is going to be improved, that's where it's going to start, right? Because look at Diego Pavia last year. He was banged up basically throughout the entirety of the year. And they don't have the receivers on the outside that they would like to have, I think. I think they've taken a step back there. That's probably the biggest weakness of their entire roster. But looking at the offensive line, I think that's where you get some optimism about where this thing could go.
I want to ask you about the players Vanderbilt added in the transfer portal. You went after, you went out, and Vanderbilt made a pretty big splash in the transfer portal. I'm looking at the 247 rankings here. You finished 36th in the nation. You got 20 players. Obviously, get Keanu Coat from Alabama. Or Keanu Coot, forgetting how to say his name already. Keanu Coot, I think was that one. Yeah. But really just the asking just about the impact Vanderbilt made in the transfer portal, how a lot of those guys are going to fit in this year. You know, you mentioned all the returning starters. Are a lot of these guys that are coming from the transfer portal really going to be big difference makers this year?
Yeah, I would say a few will be. Coot, I think, is interesting because I think they're kind of betting on the upside there, but also they know that they don't necessarily have to have him play. He doesn't have to be a focal point for them. And I think that's the story that will play itself out in fall camp. But I do think that some of these guys will be impact guys, the offensive line especially. Mm-hmm. A wide receiver, somebody's going to have to be an impact guy if they're going to be any good in terms of pass catching. Like Trent Hudson, he's been a red zone guy for New Mexico State, didn't play at Mississippi State. Time for Trent Hudson to make an impact on an SEC team. Like this is the time he's got to do it. He's back with the New Mexico State offensive staff. He's back with Diego Pavia. Now or never for a guy like that. Chance Fitzgerald sat and waited his turn at Virginia Tech for a couple of years, came back home to Nashville, played for Vanderbilt, didn't have a great spring. Time for Chance Fitzgerald to have a great fall and crack the lineup, right? Junior Sherrill can't do this thing on his own, and they're going to have some sort of impact with their receivers. And also, I think they're going to have an impact from a Kylan Young, another New Mexico State transfer who's going to play running back, was going to play last year but missed the season, I believe, due to some academic things. And for some reason was ineligible, but he's had a really good spring. And I think is a guy they're betting on a lot of contribution from. So McKylan Young, the receivers have to contribute. They have to give them raised level of play there relative to what they had throughout the spring. And then you look at the offensive line and say, they don't have to be drastically improved, but they've got to be worth the investment Vanderbilt made in them throughout the offseason. And then I think they've got to get something from C.J. Hurd, a transfer safety from Florida Atlantic. C.J. Taylor and DeRicky Wright kind of held down the fort at safety for a couple of years. Hurd, I think, might be their best transfer when it's all said and done, and he's going to play a lot. I think the other safety spot is either going to be Dante Carter or Marlon Sewell, two returners who both are in need of a step up as well. But I guess to the long answer to your question, yes, they are going to have some impact guys. But what really is going to determine how far this thing goes is, can Diego Pavia replicate what he did? Can they find a way to scheme Eli Stowers open? Because I think all the attention is going to be on him. He's widely ranked as the best tight end in the country, which I don't think Vanderbilt's had anybody over the last couple of years or the last 10 or 15 years who's been the best at their position in the country in the preseason. So
Jay Cutler.
Yeah.
Jay.
There you go. But yeah, that's the Jay's battle here
too.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Let's go Bears. Bear down.
Nah, see, yeah. That was the reason for the Jay Cutler reference.
Absolutely.
We're talking to Joey Jawar. Joey Jawar, Vanderbilt beat writer for 24/7 Sports. You can read him at 24/7 Sports. Follow him on the Twitter machine at Joey_DWY, writing all things, all sports for the Vanderbilt Commodores on 24/7 Sports. We appreciate his time, and you hear his expertise. So let's get into something a little more fun with Diego Pavia. Ryan Williams goes out there last week and a half ago, says it's going to be an ant and a sledgehammer situation. We're going to smash them. And Diego Pavia goes on the social media, basically says, okay, we'll see, sort of, more or less. You using a couple, what was it, rap lyrics or something like that. But it basically was like, okay, let's do it. Mason and I think are in agreement that Ryan Williams, don't poke that bear. Don't juice up the hyper competitor. Just what was your perspective on this little, I mean, it's not beef, it's just talking about the next game or the game on the schedule. What was your perspective on the social media interaction? And just after being around Diego Pavia, what kind of guy is he? And, you know, you're talking about, can he replicate his season last year or take a step forward? What's your, you know, take your Big J journalist hat on. What's your opinion of if he can do that?
Yeah, first of all, being around Diego Pavia is, it's like nothing that I've ever experienced before. Here's the story. My coworker, Billy Derrick, and I, we did a podcast when Diego committed, and Billy said something about how he thought Nate Johnson still had a chance to start. And we're at practice one day, and Diego walks up to us, and he goes, did y'all really think Nate Johnson would start? And that's, and I can say that now that Nate Johnson's gone, and
love that.
I'm sure this is not going to every Vandy fan, hopefully. But, I mean, this is – that's Diego Pavia. Right? Diego Pavia summed up in one interaction there. That's it, right? Like, he – in no world did he think he was coming to Vanderbilt, moving up a level to not start. In no world did he think he wasn't going to make an impact. Like, he had all of Nashville's eyes on him before the Virginia Tech game. That his first press conference, he's making guarantees. He's saying all this crazy stuff, and then he backs it up. Like, that's Diego Pavia in a nutshell. He's sitting there before the Alabama game talking about how everyone in the world thinks that Alabama is going to win that game, but he goes, only God knows what's going to happen. And I've been praying, basically, was his point. And I just don't think that that's a bear you want to poke necessarily. But also, I don't think Alabama approached that game with the proper intensity and focus last year. And I think there was an interaction with Diego in the handshake lines before the game where Alabama had kind of poked the bear there a little bit and had kind of basically told him, we're not worried about you guys. And I think Diego remembered that and still does. So I think Alabama approaching that game is more of a revenge game and a game that actually matters to them. That matters more than I think people realize here, because Vanderbilt's going to have to be perfect again. If Alabama plays Alabama's A game and Vanderbilt plays Vanderbilt's A game, it's probably going to be a 10 or 15 point Alabama win, right? So that's where you look. But also, if Diego Pavia and Vanderbilt don't like that comment, I'm sure they have the capability to do something about it, because they did it last year, and it's kind of what they've done throughout his entire time at Vanderbilt. I mean, even back to like that podcast clip, that was in February, and he remembered that in August or September when we had talked to him. I mean, that he's just very externally motivated, and he uses it better than just about anybody I've ever seen. That's what makes him a special player. It's not the arm strength or even the mobility. It's, man, he's just built differently mentally than anybody else I've ever seen.
We're signed up with a podcast service, Bubble, and I'm wondering if Diego Pavia uses this, because you can type like your name, you can type anything, Alabama football, and it'll just AI every place where, so maybe Greg Byrne uses it, right? It'll just AI, oh, this podcast talks, you know, Alabama football at this timestamp. If he's just Diego Pavia, and that's where he found Joey Dwyer's comments, and if so, Diego, you're welcome to jump on this show as well.
He's cut them all together into like one 10-minute thing that he listens to every morning of just people talking about, oh, Diego Pavia can't do it.
Yeah, let's look at maybe the other side of the coin. I think Mason and I are in agreement. I don't want to speak for you, Joey, but I do think that Clark Lee's got this thing going in the right direction. Let's look at the other side of the coin, though. If it goes bad, if it goes not so hot, if Vanderbilt doesn't return to a bowl game, I think that's maybe where my bar is. Maybe a little bit better than the Birmingham Bowl is kind of what I'm expecting, but a returning to a bowl game. If the season doesn't go the way that the Commodore faithful wants, why? What is the biggest weakness for the Vanderbilt Commodores?
I think the simple answer is the schedule. I mean, it's going to be kind of a cop-out answer, but there's two games that I think that you kind of pencil in as losses and then the rest are 50-50 games, or probably more likely 40-60 games for them. And to the thing for Vanderbilt football has always been, like, if you're going to have a bowl eligible season, you've got to pull two or three upsets. That's always been the case for them.
Sure.
It may not quite be that this year, but you're going to have to beat a team that people don't expect you to beat if you want to end up there. And I think the simple answer is just, like, they beat who they're supposed to beat, and they fall a little bit short against teams that they're not supposed to beat. And that's pretty simple, but I think that's kind of where it falls. And also, they played their particular scheme pretty flawlessly throughout the last year. They barely turned it over ever. They dominated the time of possession, and even a lot of their losses, how replicable is that? We'll see. I mean, it's not that they can't do it. It's just that it's so rare that a team plays that fundamentally well within what they want to do and continues to do it week in, week out. So is that repeatable? Is there a little bit of a step back now that people know that that's kind of what they want to do? There's a year full of tape. Also, you look at it, they had a big slide in the second half last year. They won the Georgia Tech game and Birmingham Bowl, but also their offense took a major step back in the last 3 or 4 weeks of the season. They needed that reset to kind of change how their game plan was and things along those lines. But guys, that's where you look and you say you're worried. Like, their offense took a major slide, and it was because teams kind of figured out what they wanted to do. Teams didn't have a book on them because they were so different. Now people have a book on them, and I think that's where you're worried. And you're also worried, like, their defense, I think, is improved. They've got a lot of continuity. They got a lot of returners. You still don't have Jordan Davis on the defensive line, and you still don't have Kool-Aid McKinstry at corner, right? So that's the thing. And are they ever going to be able to play man? Are they ever going to be able to rush the passer consistently? Those are the things that I worry about with them. And that's not to say that they're not going to have a great year, because I think they certainly could. But I do worry at times, like, how much of what they did is repeatable and how much of the book is out on kind of what they want to do. Tim Beck is good at evolving. At some point, though, you're kind of pinned in a corner with the scheme you want to run, and you've got to kind of figure it out from there.
All right, we're hanging out with Joey Dwyer of 24/7 Sports and Know Your Enemy, the Vanderbilt Commodores, trying to get to know the Commodores before they come to Tuscaloosa this fall. Want to get into expectations just a little bit, because I think that you've heard my expectation is to make a bowl game again and maybe a little better than Birmingham Bowl. But you live in Nashville and you've been covering the team. You've got the Vanderbilt faithful in your DMs and in your comments. What is the Vanderbilt expectation for the coming season? Are they all expecting challenge for college football playoff craziness? You know how fans are. Or is there any sense of reasonable expectations?
I think the expectation within the fan base is probably similar to yours. It's bowl eligible. That's mine too. I think that'd be a successful year for them. I think there is room for them to get a couple more. I think the schedule is difficult, and I think the schedule could hurt them. I also don't think it's impossible to where you look and say there's 4 or 5 games that they have no chance in. I think Texas and Alabama are the two where I think everybody's betting on a loss in those games. You got to go on the road to play Texas. You got to go to Bryant-Denny to play Alabama. Those are difficult games that I don't really know where it lines up for them in that way. But the rest of them, I think they could get maybe without LSU in the win column. I think the rest of them, they probably have a chance in. So I think that's the realistic expectation within the media and the fan base. And guys, it's pretty good. I thought they would win 3 games last year. I said that on a podcast, and somehow it didn't come back to bite me, because I think everybody kind of thought that, except for maybe Diego Pavia and Clark Lee. But even, like, you could tell in fall camp, Clark Lee had kind of – you could tell he was defeated some days when he was walking up to do his press conference with us. Like, gosh, I don't know. It seemed like he was like, I don't know what we have here, really. And it was such an odd – I'll get back to expectations in a second. It was such an odd fall camp, because it didn't look like they had anything throughout fall camp. You're watching their scrimmages and you're like, wow, they might be 2-10 again. They might, and they lose to Georgia State and you're like, wow, this thing could go south. And then they figure it out all of a sudden.
That's the law. Every time I try to tell my friends that Vanderbilt is not a bad team, they go, really? They lost to Georgia State. And I could not get over that hump in all my discussions, Joey.
Yeah, I mean, that was an unbelievable loss. There's a I don't know if you guys have been around Vanderbilt long enough to know the same old Vanderbilt kind of narrative. I mean, that was same old Vanderbilt personified. You go beat Virginia Tech, you kick Alcorn State's butt, and then you go to Georgia State and lose a game that you have no business losing. The stadium's half empty. I mean, that was the worst place I've ever covered a game. And you will see a big bad SEC team walk in there, and they just get pushed around up front. Their corners can't play man against Sunbelt receivers. Like, what do you do in that case when you're trying to evaluate this team? That was the team that, for reference, like, so we don't look stupid, that's the team that was in fall camp that we were watching every day telling people, oh, they might win three games. Like, that's exactly what they were. And then they kind of figured out their identity. They played to it nearly flawlessly. And that's why you trust Clark Lee's vision. I've always thought Clark Lee's really bright. And that leads me to the next piece of the expectation thing. Like, they think they can win the national championship. I talked to Diego Pavia 2 days before fall camp, and he told me on the record, like, we think we can win the national championship. I was so stunned that 2 days later, the first day of spring ball, I asked him, I'm like, do you actually think you can win the national championship? He's like, yeah, yeah. It says it on video. And then everyone else comes in and says the same thing. I'm like, wow. So that's their internal belief. Clark Lee had told somebody privately that I know that he thinks the playoffs should be the expectation for them. And he hasn't necessarily committed to that on the record, but gosh, they're setting the bar higher than I think anybody externally could at this point, guys.
Well, that's exactly where I want to go with this next question about Clark Lee. It seems like since he's taken over, he has done really put so much effort into building such a specific culture at Vanderbilt of a tough football team that is really not going to get pushed around by anybody. I know we just got done talking about Georgia State, but you said they found their rhythm last year. They really did find an identity, you know, the back two thirds of last season almost. And I think have solidified themselves as a lot of people respect Vanderbilt as a tough team that is going to not roll over for anybody. I guess just how important is it that Vanderbilt has, you know, kind of just allowed Clark Lee the last 5 years, I understand, have not been great, to have the time to build this culture, to have the time to build these connections with everyone. And, you know, it seems like at least the juice around Nashville, around this program is growing a bit with every year.
Yeah, I think it's really important that he's had a long leash. You can't build Vanderbilt football with a short leash. You're going to lose too many games. Too many people are going to be upset with you. As an athletic director, you have to make the hire as a Vanderbilt football coach, and you have to just live with it. And that's why hiring Clark Lee was so important. Everyone for a long time has kind of criticized Clark Lee for not having prior head coaching experience. But in my mind, there's always been no doubt that he's the guy to run this thing. Like, he's not looking to jump to another job. He understands the place. He understands how to win there. He understands what you have to do to win there because he's been around the program for so long. He's an alum. He knows Nashville. He knows the people that are watching his program and what their expectations are. You just have to let him do what he does. And I know me and some of my buddies on the beat and elsewhere have given Shea Ralph some crap over the years. She called herself a visionary. And we've always thought that's something that someone has to say about you rather than you say about yourself.
True.
Shea Ralph's great, by the way. She's a lovely person. We love to give her crap about that. But Clark Lee, I think in every sense with this program, is a visionary in terms of how he has wanted to build it. And he finally got some proof of concept this year. I think it was really gratifying for him. He cried in two or three post-game press conferences, if I remember right. And it finally all came together for him this year. And I think this coming year is another window for them. Like, if they're going to win big, it's going to be this year as well. And I think that's why they're setting the expectation this way, because in a year, they're just going to reset anyway. They're going to have a new quarterback, a new offensive line, a new tight end. So they're going to reset anyway. Why not go for it this year? This feels like a big year for them. And I think everything came a year later than Clark Lee thought it would come. The 2-10 year, they fully expected to make a bowl game. There was a lot of behind the scenes talk that they thought they had a bowl game team. And then the locker room fell apart. The culture that he was trying to build completely fell apart. And he did some long, hard searching. And Mason, to your point, like, they gave him the leash to be able to do that. Whereas if this was Vanderbilt basketball and you have a season replicable to that, you're fired. But I think the athletic department finally understood, if you're a Vanderbilt football coach, you have to have a leash. You have to be able to make mistakes and have crappy years, because Vanderbilt football has never had sustained success. So if you want to do it, you got to live with some downs. And they finally figured out NIL. We'll see what RevShare brings for them. But you feel like they're finally trending upwards, at least in terms of program infrastructure as well as the talent. I think the program infrastructure gives you some confidence that they can maybe win beyond Diego and Eli Stowers. So they're in a good place. And Mason, I love the point. Like, you had to give Clark Lee a couple crappy years to develop this, and he's finally doing it and making Candace Story Lee look smart in the process.
And no matter what happens with Diego Pavia and Eli Stowers, you've got First Bank Stadium completed. Just real quick, because last year when we were up there, you had the right-hand side, the right-hand side end zone under construction, but the left-hand side looked gorgeous, looked incredible. What do you just real quick on the stadium renovations and how excited you are to work in a renovated facility?
Yeah, I don't know that it's one of the better venues in the league, but it certainly feels a lot better than my first year on the beat when both end zones were dirt and you could barely park, you could barely get in the stadium. So now I think it's a big testament to Candace Story Lee as well. Like, when we had initially reported that they were doing Vandy United and kind of working on all those facilities, half the fan base didn't believe us because they thought the level of incompetence within the athletic department was so high that it would just never get done. And it got delayed, it got pushed back, but they did it. And I think that's really what matters here. So credit to Vanderbilt for actually getting it done. More credit to them even for getting the basketball facility done, state of the art, one of the best in the league. So again, like, most people around that fan base and who had worked in athletic department over the years, they thought the level of incompetence within the athletic department was too high for it to happen. And I don't think that it's a necessarily incompetent department anymore. They figured out NIL, they figured out facilities, and they finally put winning products out on the field and court in a few sports. So guys, I don't think it's as bleak as it was a few years ago, for sure.
So let's wrap up our Know Your Enemy segment how we usually do it. We'll run through the schedule. We'll predict wins and losses. Joey, you haven't been with us with the other teams. Why would you have been? But this is really quick. This is kind of knee-jerk reactions. We'll go through the schedule. I'll go Joey, Mason, Joe. You're the guest. We'll make you go first. So we're starting Saturday, August 30th. We're taking on Charleston Southern.
They're going to win that game. That's a win. No way they're not going to win that game.
There we go. Three wins. Then now we're going on the road to Virginia Tech Saturday, September 6th. You get a little revenge for Virginia Tech, Joey?
I don't know. It's tough to play there, especially if it is a night game. So I don't know. I don't know that I feel comfortable predicting a win there, but I do think they're better on paper than Virginia Tech at this point. I'll probably give them a win for now.
Yeah, I think that's a good early test of, like, your litmus test for what this Vanderbilt team could be. I'll give them a win. I feel confident.
Joey, are you a Metallica guy?
On and off, yeah. I'm excited to be there and see all that. That'll be great.
Absolutely. I'll go win as well. So three wins. We're at 2-0. And then, we're going on the road to South Carolina. Mason and I have a deep respect for Williams-Brice Stadium. Do you?
I mean, Vanderbilt never, ever beat South Carolina. South Carolina could be 0-10, Vanderbilt could be 10-0, and I would think South Carolina would have a chance to beat Vanderbilt. That's just how it always has gone between those two programs, and I don't see why it'd be any different this year. I mean, look at last year. Like, South Carolina coming into Nashville, people were thinking maybe it was down a little bit. They could push Vanderbilt around, and that was the only regular season game until the last two or three weeks that Vanderbilt had lost by more than one score. So, yeah, I don't see how they're beating South Carolina. I also think South Carolina is better than Vanderbilt as well, not just because of what the history says.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to give this one to the Gamecocks.
I think we're in agreement again. 2-1 now. Big revenge game. Will First Bank Stadium be packed to welcome the Georgia State Panthers?
I think more packed than it would have been if Vanderbilt had gone and taken care of business. I'm gonna think Vanderbilt's gonna win that game. Otherwise, you might see the north end zone burned down now. I mean, that would be one of the worst losses in recent Vanderbilt football memory. And there's been some really bad ones. So I guess they're going to win that game. But if they lose, I'm almost, like, excited to see what would happen if they lost, just to just to kind of see. I would probably just walk around the stadium after the press conference and just look. That would be unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, every bit of good grace we just gave Clark Lee on this program would be tossed out the window if they lose that game. I'm going to give them the win.
Absolutely. Well, I'll go as well. So three wins right there. Then we're still at home against Utah State. Oh, my only Utah State memory is 55-0 against them.
Jordan here Love ain't walking through that door.
2 years ago. So we keeping the momentum going against the Aggies, Joey.
Yeah, I don't see why they would lose this game. This is a win for them. And I mean, you're in a pretty good spot if you beat Virginia Tech and lose to South Carolina. That's not a bad way to start the year.
Yeah, giving them the win.
All right, 4-1 for all of us, and now we're on the road at Alabama. You said, we'll pause right here and do a little bit longer, but for the rest of them, you said a minute ago, if Vanderbilt plays, it's A-plus game, and Alabama plays, it's A-plus game, it's probably 10 to 15 points. You think it's that close?
It might not be. That might have been a little generous on my behalf towards Vanderbilt.
I'm just poking you.
Yeah, I mean, it would take a perfect showing out of Vanderbilt, and it would take another lapse in focus from Alabama, and I don't anticipate that at this point. I'm gonna go Alabama by maybe a significant amount here, because I don't think they're going to overlook Vanderbilt again.
But, Mason, what if Alabama has quarterback questions? We've gone a month, and we still are worried about who the quarterback is.
I mean, are we worried that much?
I'm just looking for other angles.
Ty Simpson out there. It's like, all right, we got Mac Jones again. Fine with me.
I'm just looking for other angles.
You throw Austin Mack out there, you might have a dynamic talent. Throw Keelan Russell out there, we know you got a dynamic talent.
That's true.
I'm feeling all right. Whoever it's going to be, I'm giving the win to Alabama here. I think it's, like Joey said, probably going to be a fairly significant margin.
All right, 4-2 for all of us now. And then you're back in Nashville. Oh, my gosh. I would love it if Brian Kelly fell on his face. Is there any way that the Vanderbilt Commodores, that can this be their big home upset of the year?
It certainly could be. I haven't dove deep enough into LSU's personnel to give you a realistic
sure, this is just knee-jerk in June reactions.
Right, but I'm thinking, like, at some point they're going to pull some black magic and find a way to win a game they have no business winning, and this almost feels like an opportunity to do so. But, again, like, Vanderbilt really hasn't had great history against LSU, and last year didn't really look the part when they went to LSU. So we'll go from there, but I would say that it's gonna be an uphill climb for sure.
Brian Kelly's always good for one. Give me the Commodores.
Didn't he drop one in Missouri last year?
Yes, he did.
I'm going with that as well.
Yeah, Brian Kelly's always due for one bad loss at least.
5-2. We're sitting right there, ready to claim our bowl game, especially as we bring Eli Drinkwitz into town. Missouri's next. Yeah, I kind of love Eli, Joey Dwyer, just to let you know. but
love his attitude.
Yes. Well, what do you think, Vanderbilt, Missouri?
I don't know. Missouri does have some turnover, especially at skill positions.
A lot.
Yeah, and I don't know that I feel uncomfortable predicting a Vanderbilt win here, just with kind of the state of things around Vanderbilt. I think Missouri's got a lot to prove, and the prediction certainly could change heading into that week. But for now, I would cautiously say Vanderbilt.
Yeah, Missouri did not finish the season strong last year, and then they lost a lot of the players that didn't finish the season strong last year. So I'm gonna ride with Vanderbilt again.
And we're bowl eligible before November.
You gotta be feeling good about that.
6-2, you're feeling great. And I mean, come on, going out to Texas next. Well, you get a week off to recover, and then you're going out to Texas next. I think we probably all are in agreement again, Joey.
Yeah, and also, like, let's say they're 5-3 instead of 6-2. Let's say they split LSU and Mizzou.
Sure. Perfect.
And that's really a great outcome for this program and their history. Even if they're 5-4 after Texas, that's a wonderful outcome for where this thing has been and where they want to go in the future. That would be real progress.
Yeah, so I'm at 6-3, and some of us are at 5-4, or that's a-okay. But then you come back home November 8th against the Auburn Tigers. Man, how much love is Auburn getting this offseason? Am I just a biased person, Joey? Give us a little bit. You know, I see the wide receivers are supposed to be good, and we've hit the transfer portal with the quarterback. Do you believe in Hugh Freeze? What do you think about Vanderbilt hosting Auburn November 8th?
I don't know that I believe in Hugh Freeze. I think they'll be better for sure, but I don't know that I believe in him. And I don't know if they're an entirely great matchup for Vanderbilt, but for now, here's what I'll table this and say they're going to get 2 out of 3 against LSU, Mizzou, and Auburn. That would probably be my guess, and I would guess Auburn would be one of those.
Yeah, I think I like Vanderbilt here. I'm not drinking the Auburn Kool-Aid this offseason. I need to see it to believe it. Need to see it from Jackson Arnold. He was not did not really impress me last year at Oklahoma. I'm going to need to see it from Auburn before I buy into it.
He just needs to roll with Deuce Knight right off the bat.
That's what I think he should
live and die with Deuce Knight. So his sophomore year is just excellent.
Yeah, you spend the whole offseason talking to the administration saying, look at what he did this year. See this stretch of 5 plays? That looked like Cam Newton, didn't it?
Uh-huh. So I'll go here with the Commodores as well. So now I'm at 7-3. And then Joey, I'll just tell you, I have no respect for Kentucky. None.
Kentucky's going to be, losing Vince Merrill the way they did. And it felt like he was getting off a sinking ship there. I don't think they're going to be any good. And it's weird to predict, it's genuinely jarring to predict this many wins for a Vanderbilt football team in the preseason, but I don't think Kentucky is – I mean, I think Kentucky in a lot of ways is what Vanderbilt was a few years ago. So I'm going to – I would go with Vanderbilt in this way. And who knows, maybe they could shock Vanderbilt. I thought their defense last year was better than people gave it credit for. But also, you lose the assistant that really built a lot of this thing with Mark Stoops. Mark Stoops, for as much as a guy with that much tenure can be, feel like he's on the hot seat a little bit and – I just think they lost a lot as well, so I would go with Vanderbilt here too.
I certainly should go with Vanderbilt.
Don't do it.
They've got to drop one game somewhere.
You're right.
They got to.
You're
somewhere. Right, yeah. It's going to happen. I'm not doing it against Kentucky. Kentucky's going to be so bad, though. Give me Vanderbilt, but I don't love that. I don't love projecting this many wins. It just feels wrong.
It does feel wrong. I have them at 8-3 now, and then we're at our season finale at Tennessee. Probably not so hot, Joey.
Something about Tennessee and Knoxville just...
That's true.
Keep going. Prevents me from thinking Vanderbilt's going to win that game. Maybe after I see Tennessee, and if Aguilar's not any good, then we'll go from there. But it's something about being there and watching Joe Milton a few years ago just carve up Vanderbilt, his best career outing. It just needs me. I need to see them beat Tennessee and Knoxville before I predict that they beat Tennessee and Knoxville. There were people predicting they'd beat Tennessee last year, and Tennessee came in and boat raced them. I think the line of scrimmage is going to be bigger in that game than the quarterback play, and that's where I stand for now. I would guess Tennessee wins that game still, even if Tennessee's down a little bit.
Yeah, I'm going to probably roll with Tennessee, too. I think, like Joey just said, even in a down year, Tennessee is probably on paper going to be better than Vanderbilt most seasons, and that will probably come into play here.
I'll get a phone call from my friend, Taylor Gibson, if I don't pick Tennessee. So I guess I will pick Tennessee there, and I have Vanderbilt landing at 8-4. Some of us are sitting there at 7-5, but, man, either number, you're doing great, Clark Lee. Joey, why don't you wrap it up with final thoughts maybe on those two numbers or just kind of what people aren't considering about the Vanderbilt Commodores this season.
Yeah, I would go closer to 7. And if I'm in a 50-50 scale or whatever, I'm going probably 70% odds they're going to finish 7-5 rather than 8-4. I just feel like, kind of like Mason had said, like law of averages indicates to you that they end up with 7 and not 8. And that's just, maybe that's me and being around Vanderbilt football and the skepticism around it for so long. This is a different era of Vanderbilt football than this is different than your 14-year-old son's Vanderbilt football. This is different than your 30-year-old dad's Vanderbilt football. You probably wouldn't even know much about Vanderbilt football. If you had a 30-year-old dad, you'd probably be like 5 years old, but your 50-year-old dad, things along those lines. Vanderbilt is different this year in terms of its edge, in terms of its confidence, its swagger than it has been over the past 40 years. Right. But also, the schedule is difficult. They're still playing in the SEC, and you still have to – you can't just talk. You got to go win games, and I'm a little worried about how they hold up towards the end of the year in particular. I think that's been a thing over the last couple of years where Clark Lee's gotten a lot out of them early in the year. That's why you feel comfortable predicting they'll beat Virginia Tech on the road and things along those lines. But every other team in the league probably has more bodies than them, and they've tried to build that up, especially on the line of scrimmage. They've tried to build it up. They've really built some depth on both sides of the ball. It's different, though, when you've got five stars who are backups at other places. And I think that's where some of the skepticism comes in. And it's like Vanderbilt's doing everything it can to maximize this roster, but how much does it wear down towards the end of the year when their scheme kind of gets figured out like it did last year and the bodies kind of wear down a little bit? If anybody can right the ship, it's Diego Pavia. But it's weird to talk about this in June to say, like, wait for November and see what happens. But I think there is some potential for that. But also, this thing is trending upward, and I think it's going to be a really fun year for Vanderbilt football. They're going to win a couple of games that people on the outside are stunned that they win, and they're going to probably not lose a game like Georgia State again. So we'll see how it goes, but I think it's not the same Vanderbilt football that we have come to know throughout most of our lifetimes.
He's Joey Dwyer. You read him on 24/7 Sports. You follow him on the Twitter machine at Joey_DWY. Joey, man, I appreciate your time. You made us a whole lot smarter today.
I don't know about that. I'll fix my camera quality and maybe get a mic before the next time I come on here. This is unacceptable.
Nah, it's okay.
His sound is fantastic.
Yeah, you sound good in my ears, and that's all that matters to me, Joey. I'll see you in Atlanta here in about a month.
Yeah, looking forward to it. It'll be my first SEC Media Day, believe it or not.
Well, it's going to be a lot of fun, and luckily it'll be an easy drive for all of us. So, Joey, I appreciate your time, man, and we'll catch up with you soon.
Yeah, thank you, guys. You guys do great work. Looking forward to seeing you guys more in the future here.
Absolutely. That's Joey Dwyer, and that concludes our Know Your Enemy, the Vanderbilt Commodore segment right here on the Joe Gaither Show. That was our best one yet.
Yeah, I think so. You know, as Joey was giving us his final thoughts there, I was connecting some dots in my head, you know, a little Beautiful Minds action.
Yeah, please. Here.
Ever since Vanderbilt dropped that new logo, the new V logo, that was right before this last season. You can literally, like, you'd mention new era of Vanderbilt football, quite literally, like new logo, new uniforms, everything. It's just very, very interesting. You know, not that there's any real correlation there, but look good, feel good, play good. So
shoot, look at my sunglasses and hat. Every time I put them on, I'm like, yep, it's ready to go. What do you think about Keanu Coote? Is he going to have, let's see. What's a good number, but not too high? Seven and a half sacks, over under for Keanu Coote. 12 games, that's a little less than one per game. I don't know.
Give me the under.
Oh! You think he's going up to Vanderbilt to enjoy Broadway a little too much? Maybe Diego can snap him in the line.
The track record there with Alabama or with players transferring out of Alabama is just not in his favor. And I'm going to ride with the statistics here.
I agree with you, unfortunately. That's going to do it for our show today. We're going to try to catch up with Katie Windham tomorrow on the program. We will update you on how the boys did in day one of the NCAA Outdoor Track and Field Championships. We will let you know who the girls are, the ladies are, who are competing in their day one tomorrow on the Thursday edition of the show. We welcome your phone calls, your voicemail at 205-462-7340, extension 800. If you want to leave your Vanderbilt prediction, schedule prediction, if you want to talk about athletes who were taken too soon, that's just a little off the wall thing for me that I thought about, or anything else that's on your mind, we appreciate everybody who joined us today. I apologize, maybe my voice will be a little stronger tomorrow. We'll see. You can find us at JoeGaither6, at MAWoods_ at Bama Central, and we will chat with you tomorrow on the Joe Gaither Show on Bama Central and BamaCentral.com.
Thanks for joining us on today's edition of the Joe Gaither Show on Bama Central. Keep up with Joe on all his social media pages at JoeGaither6. Subscribe, rate, and review the show on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, and be sure to read us daily at BamaCentral.com.